I offer my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. I pray to Swami that he gives us all the understanding that it is Swami who speaks and it is Swami who listens through each one of us. Elders, sisters and brothers, Sai Ram to all of you. It gives me great pleasure to join you all today in trying to prepare and deliver this online talk to all of you. It has helped me connect to the Swami within, and I am grateful to the organizers for giving me this opportunity. We're talking about how do we connect to Swami? How do we plug into the source? An eternally relevant question, isn't it? In fact, even as I was thinking about the topic, it just occurred to me that when we were graduating, when we were completing our masters, we prayed to Swami for an audience. We wanted to have an exclusive time with Swami to express our gratitude and also to have a few moments that we would cherish for the rest of our lives because we were leaving his physical presence. And very interestingly, I just remembered that the entire discourse that Swami delivered that day was on this theme of connecting to Swami, or how do we feel Swami's presence even after we move away from his physical presence. Much of what I'm going to be sharing today is what Swami told us on that day. It is very relevant even today, even for me, and I'm sure it is relevant to each one of you too. But we will come to that in the course of this talk. I'm sure most of you would be aware of this classic story from the Srimad Bhagavatam, probably one of the most popular ones, the story of Gajendra Moksham. You had this elephant king who is caught by a crocodile when he goes to drink water in a pond. And then he calls out to the Lord, and the Lord comes running. I'm cutting short the whole story and just giving you the gist with the belief that most of you are familiar with the story. But the description of how the Lord responds to this call is very interesting and very beautifully captured by various poets and writers of the Bhagavatam. They say how Lord Vishnu gets up from his seat. He's playing a game of chess with Mother Lakshmi. But he gets up and he runs. He forgets to take his upper cloth. He forgets to take his weapon because he's going to protect a devotee. He might need that. He even forgets to call for Garuda, his vehicle. And that's how he rushes to protect Gajendra. Whenever you listen to the story, at least whenever I listen to the story, I wonder, how do you call Swami this way? How do you call him in such a way that he's ready to drop everything and come running to you? There is a beautiful Chinnakatha that Swami narrates in reference to this Gajendra Moksham episode. There was a king in his court, a Bhagavata, one who gives discourses on the Bhagavatam, was giving a recital, and he was talking about this very episode of Gajendra Moksham. And listening to his narration, the king had a doubt. The king very humbly stopped the Bhagavata and asked him, "I have a doubt. Will you be kind enough to answer this? Clear this doubt for me." And the king asked, "This elephant called out and Lord Vishnu came running. It is said that the Lord resides in Vaikuntha or heaven. So my question is, what is the distance between earth and Vaikuntha?" The Bhagavata was a bit tensed. He was taken aback by this question from the king. So he started flipping through his books, hoping that there would be some number, some reference which he could put in front of the king. But unfortunately, there was no way he could tell the king the exact distance between earth and Vaikuntha. The king turned to the other scholars in the court. Everyone put their head down. He turned to the wise ministers that were in his court, and nobody came forward to answer the king. The king was very disappointed. He said, "This is such a simple question. I thought one of you would be able to help me with an answer." Swami narrates in the Chinakatha that the servant who was standing behind the king and who was fanning the king, he came forward and said, "My Majesty, if you don't mind, can I tell you what I think is the answer?" The king was surprised, in this hall full of learned men and scholars, no one had the answer, but here is this humble servant who seems to be brave enough to come forward and give an answer. So he turned to his servant and he asked, "So what is it? What do you think is the answer?" And then the servant said, "Your Majesty, the elephant king called and Lord Vishnu came running. So it only means that the distance Vaikuntha is from heaven is just as far as an elephant's call can reach." A simple answer, but Swami would say, in that lies the greatest truth. God is always just a call away. He is only as far as your call can reach. So then comes the question, should I shout? Should I scream? Should I sing on the top of my voice? Or should I use some device to call him? Should I use a loudspeaker? How loudly should I call him? I'm reminded of a very beautiful episode which was narrated to me by my teachers in college, must be. This happened in the Purnachandra Auditorium. There was this music program which was in progress. Swami was seated in front in the D and he was watching this program. And many of you may be familiar with his name. The program was being done by P. Sushila and another great legendary singer, S. Janaki. And the piece that was being performed was by S. Janaki. Janaki Ma had one very interesting talent. Apart from being one of the sweetest singers you would ever hear, she also had this ability to mimic different voices. So she could sing like a small child, she could sing like an elderly lady, she could sing like a man, she could of course sing with her natural voice too. So she could sing in all these different tones. So she was presenting a song which was actually a story of a great devotee of Lord Venkateshwara. And this lady was old by that time that this event happens. She had this practice of making this pilgrimage to Tirupati every year. And every year she would walk up that Tirumala or the mountain. And that used to be her sadhana. She would walk up that mountain and have darshan of the Lord. With years, with advanced age, she couldn't do that trek anymore. People advised her against it, but she said, "No, this is a promise that I make to my Lord, that I will come every year to see him." So she says, "I must go." So she takes this treacherous trek up the mountain, and midway she finds that she's not able to take a step forward. She's absolutely exhausted, and she's sitting by the wayside, unable to take even a step forward. And in that state, she starts crying, and she says, "Oh, Lord Venkateshwara, I thought I'll come and see you, but here I am too old to make this journey." So this entire episode was being presented in the form of a song. So Janaki Amma would sing like an old lady. She would sing like the way the other pilgrims would come and try to help her, and all of this in song. The story goes that Lord Venkateshwara looks at this plight of this devotee, and he comes in the form of a little boy. And he comes to this lady and says, "Grandma, what are you trying to do? Where are you trying to go?" And then she says, "I want to go and have darshan of Venkateshwara." And the little boy says, "But you're too old for that." And the little boy tries to dissuade her by saying that, "Don't you know he's everywhere and you don't have to go anywhere to have his darshan?" And she says, "I know all that, but I would like to go and have darshan of Lord Venkateshwara, my Ishta Devata, my deity." So this little boy then helps this old lady to make that rest of the journey, and she eventually goes and has the darshan. I don't know the exact story. She eventually realizes that It's the same Lord whom she was worshipping and adoring and wanting to have the darshan of, who had come in the form of that little boy. In the crowd, deep in the crowd, you know, you all have been to the Purnachandra Auditorium or at least have had a glimpse of it. So right in the middle of the hall was seated this devotee of Swami, who was listening to these renderings, was watching this whole presentation. And in a devotional fervor, she closed her eyes and she said, "Swami, that lady called and you came. That elderly devotee called for you and you instantly came in the form of that little boy." And closing her eyes with tears brimming, she said, "Swami, I am calling you now. Will you come?" And all this she was speaking to herself. With closed eyes, with her mind's voice, she was saying, "Swami, I am calling you now. Will you come? I am calling you now. Will you come?" In the next few seconds, she found that there was a commotion around and she looked around. Everybody was attentive and moving around. And she opened her eyes to realize that Swami had got up from his chair and Swami was walking around. And for those of you who've been in a situation like that, you know how wonderful it is, you know, when suddenly Swami decides to give another round of darshan. Everyone's excited. Will Swami come this side? Will I be able to give my letter to Swami? So the restlessness around the hall, she was completely absorbed in what was happening there. And even as she was seeing, Swami parted the crowd and walked straight to where she was seated. And in all this excitement and commotion, she probably had lost the context of what was happening, why Swami was doing this. And Swami came straight, stood where she was seated, looked at her, and very simply, Swami said, "You called. You called, and I've come." How far is he? How distant is he? Do we need to shout? Do we need to scream? Do we need to go somewhere? He is as close as your mind's voice can reach, isn't it? But then there is a way in which probably he has to be called. How do we call him in such a way that he drops everything and comes running? How do we call him in such a way that he stops a drama and he comes to attend to you? As devotees, we all would be most happy to be equipped with that ability, right? I called and he came. What is it that we are missing out? Or what is it that we're still in the process of learning? I wouldn't say we have failed, but we are still picking the art. What is it that we need to learn? Going back to that interview I was talking to you about in the beginning, where Swami was talking to all of us before we were graduating. Swami showed the letter in his hand. He had collected a few letters before he came and sat there. And Swami showed us one of the letters. And Swami said, "Even this paper is God." No, he was just kind of showing that and said, "Even this paper is God. But you don't realize it. And because you don't realize it, you treat it like a paper." Similarly, everything in the world, everything around you is God, is Swami. But because you don't have that bhavam, you don't have that feeling that he is everywhere and he is everything, your experience is different. Swami then went on to say that if you are able to immerse yourself in this thought that he is here, he is everywhere, he is everything, that will eventually become your experience. And there is no doubt about it. And Swami himself said, "But you might ask me, how long will it take to reach that state?" Swami said, "Everything takes time. Even a small child takes 9 months to be born. And having been born, it takes years to start walking, few more years to start speaking, and many more years before he or she becomes useful to the society, isn't it? Everything takes time, and even this will take time. But if we are able to immerse ourselves in that thought, that he is not far, he is near, he is not elsewhere, he is right with me, everything around me is Swami, that experience is only waiting to happen. Having said that, I think that's an experience which will eventually come. You know, I'm not saying that that should be our goal right now. I should have that experience tomorrow. That is the larger experience that we're all working towards, and I'm sure at some point it will come. Talking about connecting with Swami, why do we really want to connect with Swami? When we talk about plugging to the source, connecting to Swami and having a heart-to-heart connection with him, name it however you want, why do we aspire to connect with Swami? And when we say connect, what are we connecting? Is it the physical connection? It is said that sparshanam papa vimochanam, if I'm right. Yes, touching Swami physically, when we have the opportunity to have his pad namaskar, to hold his hand, to touch the hem of his robe, it meant a lot. But is that the kind of connect we are talking about? Connecting physically with Swami? In that interview that Swami gave us, Swami made a very beautiful point. We were a class of about 100 odd students. So you could imagine, we filled the bhajan hall that day. And probably 3 or 4 of us had the opportunity to sit around Swami's feet, who also grabbed the opportunity to perform Padaseva for Swami. So Swami looked at those boys and Swami said, "See these boys now. They are pressing Swami's feet. And they are feeling very happy about this opportunity," right? Who wouldn't be? Swami said they are having a lot of ananda because they're able to press Swami's feet. But imagine if they had to do this for somebody else, some other old person or someone to whom you have to offer this service. Would you be as happy? And Swami went on to say they are happy because they believe, they think that they are doing this to Swami. And Swami went on to say, isn't everything only in the mind? If you believe, if you think, if you are convinced, then the experience follows. So when we are saying connecting with Swami, we are not talking about connecting physically. In fact, even if you were to draw the analogy of gadgets, which we charge, which we plug into a power source, even technologically we are moving towards a wireless scenario, isn't it? We are even talking about over-the-air wireless charging, not even contact wireless charging. So even technologically, we're moving to a state where there is no physical connect or physical plugging in. So what is that connecting that we're talking about? What do we have to connect with Swami? Isn't it just the mind? Isn't this mind that needs to be connected with Swami? Because it is with this mind that we are constantly doing all our activities. It is this mind that we are taking it into the world for our everyday activity. It is the mind that loses peace of mind. It's the mind that loses it, isn't it? It's the mind that struggles to make decisions. It's the mind that gets clouded. So all the time when we talk about connecting to Swami, we are talking about connecting the mind to Swami and benefiting out of that connection in the everyday activities that we carry out. When I was doing this program on radio called Answering Booth, if some of you are regular listeners of Radio Sai, you might know I did get a good number of questions from Australia too, from listeners in Australia. So when I was doing this program, I got a very interesting question. Not too sure of the age of the boy, maybe 10-year-old or 11-year-old Balvika's child, who asked me this very beautiful and pertinent question. And even as I was answering him, I said that I thank him for asking this question because as much as he needed the answer, so did I. And the question that he asked was very simple. When I was telling you, Swami said you should immerse your mind in Swami. You should immerse your mind in thoughts of Swami. This boy asked me this question. My teacher tells me that I should give my mind to Swami. How do I give my mind to Swami? What should I do to give my mind to Swami? When we talk about connecting our mind to Swami, when we talk about charging our mind with Swami, how do you give your mind to Swami? So the next few points that I'm going to make are the points that I made as an answer or in reply to that question, this beautiful question that this young boy had asked me. Swami would often say the mind is a bundle of thoughts, right? That's probably the most accurate description of the mind that you can come up with. It is a bundle of thoughts. So if you were to ask this question of how do I give this mind to Swami, the simplest answer that you can come up with is as many thoughts in a day are of Swami, that much you've given your mind to Swami. Isn't it? As many times I'm able to think of Swami during the day, that much I have given my mind to Swami. When we were children, when we were growing up in an Indian city, I would often see my parents and elders do this, that when we are traveling by bus or when you're traveling by car, whenever there would be a temple, and being secular, it doesn't matter whether it's a temple or a mosque or a church, any place of worship, whenever you cross that, we had this habit, or I would see them do this, you know, either just a silent namaskar or something like that. I don't know what that even means. So I would observe my elders do that. And as a child, I wanted to do it myself too, but I also wanted to resolve in my mind, why do we do that? And if you've been to any of the South Indian cities like Bangalore, Hyderabad, Chennai, you'll know that every corner would have a temple. If not a proper temple, there would be an enclosure in the wall and there would be a Ganesha idol there, or there would be a lingam there, right? So when you drive from one place to the other, you're constantly looking at these temples and you're offering your pranams. And the thought that it came to me, and because of which I think I also embraced that habit, is it's as simple as this. As many times as you're able to think of God in a day, it is good. As many thoughts in your mind can be replaced by thoughts of God, that much you benefit. Because as Swami would say, the mind is a monkey mind. It's in this thought at this moment, and next moment it's in some other thought. But the mind also has a limitation which you can make good use of. And that limitation is it can think only one thought at one moment. So if this one moment I'm able to think of Swami, there is no way I can go back to this moment and replace that thought of Swami. That moment has been fulfilled by me thinking of Swami. I have perfected that one moment because at that one moment, my thoughts were on Swami. So one of the first things that we can do is as many times in a day can we think of Swami. And one of the best techniques for that is make thinking of Swami a habit. Attach this idea of recalling Swami with every activity that you do. And Swami would say, when you wake up, you pray. I was going through a discourse yesterday where Swami said, when you're having bath, chant the Gayatri Mantra. It is like doing Abhishekam. Just before you eat your food, you say Brahmarpanam. You finish your food, thank Swami for the food. Before you go to sleep, pray to Swami. And every temple and every gopuram that you see, take it as a moment to remember Swami. So you make remembering Swami or connecting with Swami as a habit by constantly attaching it to different activities that you do. And that's one of the things that Swami taught us in the hostel, right? You wake up and there's a prayer. You go to the dining hall, there's a prayer. We have you have a match in the ground. We start with a prayer. We have a meeting, we start with a prayer. Then before we go to bed, we have a night prayer. So the best way, because you're going to have a life that is filled with the activity, and many times the activities are routine. So attach thinking of Swami to your routine. Make thinking of Swami a habit. In fact, interestingly, when we were talking to some of the old devotees who came to Swami in the 40s and 50s, they would say that the initial years in Prashantinilayam, before the Prashantinilayam was even built, when they were all living in Pathamandir, there was no darshan time, there was no interviews, there were no prayer sessions, there were no bhajan times, because they were with Swami the whole day. They would wake up with Swami, they would dine with Swami, they would go to bed with Swami, they would spend the entire day with Swami, and the 3 months or 1 month they would spend in Puttaparthi was filled with Swami, right? So there was no routine in the ashram. And many sadhakas who came at that time were a bit disappointed that this place did not have the rigor of an ashram. But then Swami said, you don't need it, because the idea behind any of these things is to connect with God, and here I am available to you every day, every moment of every day. And interestingly, all of these disciplines that we talk about, Omkaram, Suprabhatam, bhajans, and night prayers, even in the ashram, all of these disciplines came when Swami started traveling and when there were devotees who would stay back in the ashram. Interestingly, Swami gave us these disciplines, these periodic prayers, so that we can stay focused on Swami, connected on Swami, connected with Swami in the absence of that physical form. Living in that physical presence, you did not need any of these tools. Because as Swami said, in your mind, you have the idea that I am staying with Swami, I am with Swami. But when the mind is not convinced of that, I am not able to look at this camera I am looking at and say that it is Swami. I am not able to look at this setup here and say this table is Swami, that system is Swami. Because I am not in that frame of mind still. I need this tool of discipline. And that is why this periodically finding ways of connecting with Swami becomes very, very important, right? In fact, talking of gadgets, in fact, many of these tech reviewers will tell you that even when it comes to charging a mobile phone, a smartphone or a smart device, it is always better to follow a pattern. Instead of charging it whenever you need it or whenever it runs out of charge, they would say that follow a set pattern, either put it for charge every night or put it for charge for 1 hour every morning, and follow the same pattern, and that'll save your battery. I think same is the case with the mind too. If you discipline the mind will automatically think of Swami, and these will all become trigger points that allows you to think of Swami. That brings me to the second point, and that point is, you don't want thinking of Swami to become a routine also, right? You want it to become a routine, but you don't want it to become a dry routine that does not involve your feeling, isn't it? When you think of Swami, you want to think of Him with love and you want to feel connected to Swami, right? And that is where occasions like what we are involved in right now comes into play. When we are able to come together in satsang, when you're able to interact and spend time with people who are like-minded, with whom when you sit, you're able to think of Swami, when you're able to connect with Swami. Satsangs, bhajans. In fact, talking about bhajans being a means by which you're able to reconnect with Swami, the first devotees who came to Swami in the 40s, when they went back to their homes, the devotees from Bangalore, they were desperate to recreate that moment that they spent in Swami's presence. That magical few weeks that they had in Swami's presence, they wanted to go back to that. Not physically, they had to wait for a few months before they were able to physically be back with Swami. But they wanted to do it in their own place, in their own lives. And that is how they started this tradition of Thursday bhajans, which eventually became Samiti bhajans, center bhajans, Akhanda bhajan once a year, and Shivaratri bhajans. It all started with this desire of how do I keep this flame of love in my heart glowing. So one, make thinking of Swami a routine. attach it to your habits that you already have. And the second point is, whenever possible, be in the midst of those who are able to love and connect with Swami the same way you do. That will certainly help in enabling us to connect with Swami better. The third point that I would like to make, that I gave in that answer, is apart from these things, it is also very important to find at least 5 minutes in a day, be it in the morning, be it before you go to sleep, or be it during your transit to work, at least 5 minutes when you're able to be alone with Swami. When you're able to converse with Swami, when you're able to talk to him and say that, Swami, this is what's happening in my life, and this is the unpleasant thing that happened, or I'm scared about this, I would like to make myself better in this. Or, Swami, a wonderful thing happened today, I want to share it with you. Or, Swami, I want to thank you because such a beautiful thing happened to me. Just 5 minutes in a day, if we are able to sit with Swami all by ourselves and open our hearts and make Swami that dearest friend with whom we can share and express everything that runs in our mind. That's a very, very important thing that we need to do. And you could close yourself from everybody else and sit in your puja room and do it. Or it could be even in a gathering where that is a time you close yourself and you think of Swami. And for many of us, this used to be something that we would do sitting in mandir. There would be hundreds of people around, but closing your eyes, sit in solitude. And internally, we would be conversing with Swami. We would tell him that, Swami, oh, this is what happened in the college today. This is what I did, and I'm really sorry about this. There was this interview with Swami had given to some students. And many times when Swami gives this opportunity, Swami would say, if you have any questions, you can ask me. So one of the students asked this question to Swami, and he said, Swami, we follow all of these disciplines in the hostel. The toughest discipline is waking up early in the morning, suprabhatam, at 5 o'clock. And if you're not accustomed to that habit, to wake up early in the morning and sit in a dim-lit hall in the cold winter of Vrindavan, it is very, very difficult to stay awake and think of Swami and chant suprabhatam. And I know how difficult that is, having experienced that. So this student was saying, Swami, it's very difficult, this morning suprabhatam. Why is it important to do this morning suprabhatam? Swami gave an answer, which was, should I say it was humorous? It was bang on? Should I say it was playful? Swami looked at this boy and asked him. He said, when you wake up in the morning, do you have the habit of clearing your bowels? Do you answer nature's call every morning? This boy must have been a bit embarrassed, and he said, yes, Swami, that's part of the morning routine. And then Swami went on to say, when you clear your stomach in the morning, the rest of the day, you feel light and your day goes well, isn't it? Just like how your body needs that cleansing, that purging, in the same way, the mind too needs that cleansing before it starts the day's work. What an analogy to give, but as I said, it is spot on, isn't it? Swami does not mind equating praying to Swami to clearing your stomach, as long as it gives you the right input, isn't it? But what a very important and beautiful point that Swami is giving, that 5 minutes that we are able to give Swami. It would be, of course, best if it is in the early morning hours. If you're able to give that 5 minutes to Swami, the impact it would have on the 24 hours of the day is something that can be experienced by each one of us. And some of you who are already practicing it can vouch for it. Just that 5 minutes of opening ourselves to Swami. And when we say opening ourselves to Swami, that brings me to the next point, the fourth point, and that is, What do you open to Swami? Are you going to sit there and just tell him all the right things that you did, all the good things that you did? Or are you only going to pray and praise him? Most importantly, I think we should open up our weaknesses to Swami. We should be able to look at Swami and say, Swami, these are the mistakes I did yesterday. Well, these are my failings. I keep failing this in these situations every day and every time it happens. If we are able to open up and say, Swami, these are my flaws, I can tell you one thing for sure. The amount of lightness that it brings to your mind is incredible. If you're able to tell Swami, these are my flaws, and I, place it in front of you, it will, first of all, lighten your mind so much. And when you do that to Swami, you are allowing Swami to really step into your heart, step into your mind, and tidy it up for you. Till then, we are completely closed, and we kind of just turn to Swami to praise him and to just get some gifts from him or get some grace from him. It is when we are able to open our heart to him and say, Swami, these are my fears, these are my failings, these are my desires, these are my ambitions. This is what I would like to achieve. You are letting Swami into your heart. And that is why that becomes a very important practice. Swami would often say, Nenu Chakali Vadu, Swami would say in Telugu, I am your dobi, I am your washerman, and your mind is the linen I have come to wash. How absurd it would be if I were to say today, oh, I have to give my dirty clothes to the dobi, let me wash it first and then give it to the dobi. If we wait till we are pure in our mind and hearts to turn to Swami and open up to Swami and connect with Swami, it is meaningless. We are opening up to Swami and trying to connect to Swami so that our minds are purified, so that the washerman can wash our dirty linen, isn't it? So the fourth point is, when you're having this conversation with Swami, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, open up your heart, your failings, your worries, your shortcomings. Make him a partner in your journey to correct all these things. The fifth point that I would like to make is, we talked about the mind as a tool for thinking, right? The more we think of Swami, the more we have given our mind to Swami. Another very important point or tool or function that we use the mind for is to constantly make choices in life, isn't it? We are all the time making important choices, critical choices, life-changing choices, simple choices. What do I wear today? What do I eat today? Where do I go today? What do I do today? If we are able to connect these choices to Swami in some way, you dress in a certain way and say, I think Swami likes it this way. Your dietary choices are made in such a way, I think Swami would like it this way. If there is a situation, just to pause and think, what would Swami expect me to do? You're faced with a choice. You're faced with a situation where you're supposed to speak up. You're faced with a situation where you're supposed to deal with a problem. Just to pause before a choice and ask this question, what would Swami want me to do? What you do after that, that's a different topic altogether. I'm not getting into that. But since we constantly make choices with this mind, as many choices as we can, if we can attach it to Swami in our own way, you might be wrong when you think that Swami doesn't like me to eat this. You might be completely wrong when you make a choice thinking that this is what Swami would want me to. But as I said, that's a different story altogether. But the very fact that before making a choice that you paused and you asked, would Swami like me to do this? I think you have taken the first step in trying to connect with Swami. The final point that I want to talk about connecting with Swami is, we do not use the mind only to think. we do not use the mind only to make decisions. We also use the mind to act. All our actions are driven or arise in the mind as thoughts. And in our mind, we have this distinction that this work is my personal work, this work is official work, and similarly, we have this idea that this work is Swami's work. The more you indulge in the work that you believe is Swami's work, the more you are mentally connecting with Swami. Eventually, in the larger picture, the way Swami wants us to look at things, there is nothing like my work and Swami's work. Everything is Swami's work. But in our mind, there is that distinction at this point in time. So use that distinction. The more you set aside time for that work, which is Swami's work, which you think is Swami's work, which we might probably categorize as organization activity or service activity or seva or whatever it is. This is Swami's work and I have to give my time and energy for it. You are giving your mind, you're applying your mind, and that is also a beautiful way to connect with Swami. Sometime last year, I think a couple of years back, we did this beautiful series with a devotee, a singer from Sundaram Bhajan Group, Mrs. Girija Bai. And you'll be able to find those conversations on our YouTube channel. She was talking about this bhajan that she had composed, and I'm sure most of you will be familiar with this bhajan. The bhajan is Sai Sai Smaran Karo Guru Charan Kamal Dhyan Karo Keshav Madhav Bhajan Karo. So this bhajan was composed by this lady, this devotee from Sundaram Bhajan Group. So the first time she sang it, she had sung it, I think, in the Gindi temple, the famous Shirdi Baba temple, which has its history way back in the 40s. Swami has visited that place many times. So she was in a bhajan session in the Gindi temple and she sang this particular bhajan which she had composed. Initially, she had composed it in such a way that the last line would go, Sadguru Sai Smaran Karo. And that's how she had rendered it on that day too. That night, Swami comes in a dream and Swami tells her, hey, that bhajan that you sang, the last line lo, Seva Karo Ani Petu. Swami said, in the last line, don't end with Smaran Karo. Swami said, Seva Karo. Make it Sadguru Sai Seva Karo. And this is how Swami modified that song. And when I was just listening to that episode, it just struck me that whatever I've been trying to convey to you in the past half an hour, 45 minutes or so, was precisely what Swami had conveyed in that single bhajan by just making that small tweak in the last line. Think of it. The first line is Smaran Karo. Sai Sai Smaran Karo. That is what I was telling you about different ways by which you can have as many thoughts of Swami as possible. As you go through your day, as Swami would say, Anusmarana, Namasmarana. If you're sitting waiting in the, waiting for a doctor's appointment, you can think of him. If you're standing in a line waiting for your coffee, you can think of him. If you're commuting, you can think of him. As many times as possible, think of him by Namasmarana or by reciting something or chanting something. Smarana Karo is the first line. The first way by which you can think of, which you can connect with Swami is by thinking of Swami in these various ways. The next line is Dhyana Karo. Guru Charan Kamala Dhyana Karo. Dhyana is something that you do in solitude. Dhyana is something that you don't do in a congregation. You do it alone, isn't it? That covers what I was telling you about conversing with Swami, about having an exclusive time with Swami that could be just 5 minutes or 10 minutes in a day. A day where you're not disturbed by anybody else or anything else. You're completely given it one-pointedly to Swami. The next way to connect with Swami is Dhyana Karo. The third line of that bhajan is Keshava Madhava Bhajan Karo. The word bhajan, of course, we use it for singing, devotional singing. But the word bhajati actually means to love, to adore. So bhajan means singing in adoration, in love. So bhajan karo, you can actually make it you can expand the context of that and say, to do everything that will enable you to love him more. Speak about him. Listen to somebody speaking about him. Come together and sing his praises. Immerse yourself in music that will make you fall in love with him. So the third way in which you can connect to Swami is Keshava Madhava Bhajan Karo. And the only thing that was missing, which Swami corrected in that bhajan, was there was no mention of doing Swami's work. And Swami said, Sadguru Sai Seva Karo. The other way of connecting to Swami is do that activity which you think, which your mind believes is Swami's work. Till a point where that distinction goes away. But right now we believe that going to the samiti and putting up the garland on Swami's photo is Swami's work. Right now we believe going and giving blood in a blood camp, donation camp, is Swami's work. We believe going and serving food to the homeless is Swami's work. Do that. It's all right. Any work that your mind thinks is Swami's work, if you do, your mind is connecting with Swami. How beautifully Swami has captured the whole thing in a manner which I'm trying to convey in so many minutes. So those are the 6 or 7 points, I think 6 points I have covered, ways by which you can connect with Swami. And I am sure that whatever I've said, there is absolutely nothing new in it, because there is nothing new. The means of connecting to Swami are eternal. The only thing that is left is practice, right? But before I conclude, I probably will just take a couple of minutes more. All of what we spoke of till now is about connecting with Swami, plugging into Swami, recharging our mind, rejuvenating our mind, so that we can go into the world and perform our activities in the world, so that I can make better decisions, so that my mind is clear and unclouded. I can speak the way I'm supposed to, not get carried away by the moment. All of this is meant so that I can go out and do well in my profession, in my family life, in my college life, in my school life. But this is only one stage of a spiritual aspirant's journey. As devotees, slowly and surely we should move to the second stage, where connecting to Swami is not the means and the world and performing well in it is not the ends, but connecting to Swami is the ends. Connecting and being connected with Swami, as Swami said, to be immersed in that idea that Swami is with me, is the end. And everything in the world is only a means. Sorrow for me should become a means to connect with Swami. Happiness for me should become a means to connect with Swami. My daily routine should become a means to connect to Swami. Whatever work I do, I could be a lawyer, I could be a doctor, I could be a homemaker. All of these activities are nothing but a means for me to connect with Swami. That is the next stage we all must graduate to, where we are not trying to connect with Swami to perform well in the world, but we are trying to use every tool in the world so that we are able to connect better with Swami. There was this student who was graduating, I think he had graduated, and Swami had given him an opportunity to become a lecturer in Swami's college. So Swami had called him for an interview along with the 3 others who were joining the college. At that point, again, Swami opened up for any questions, and this boy asked Swami this question. He said, Swami, how do I sanctify my life? You have given me this opportunity to do Swami's work, to be in Prashanti Nilayam, to stay connected with Swami, unlike the many other students who had to leave. How do I sanctify my life? And this boy says, Swami paused for a moment. Swami looked at him and Swami said, you do not have the bhakti of Hanuman to please me. You do not have the commitment of Radha to love me. And then Swami went on giving a few examples like this, saying that you do not possess all of these great virtues of these great devotees. Then Swami said, you don't need to do any of that. Don't worry about all of that. Get up in the morning, pray to Swami before you go for work, prepare diligently, sincerely for your class, deliver your lectures, take good care of your children, who are good care of the students who are entrusted to you, clear their doubts, sincerely work whatever has been given to you. At the end of the day, Swami said, mentally, in your heart, offer it to Swami and say, Swami, I offer all my efforts to you. And Swami said, that is more than enough. That is all I seek from you. Every role that we play in this world, every duty that we perform, is an opportunity for us to use to connect with Swami. To reach that ultimate state where Swami says that you don't think that Swami is here and not here. Swami is not responding, or Swami cannot be reached. Everything around you is a tool for us to reach that state where we are constantly connected with Swami. I would like to conclude by reading out a few lines. A prayer. We all would love to have a prayer that helps us connect with Swami. But here is a prayer that is written by none other than Swami himself. And interestingly, this is a prayer that Swami wrote to Professor Kasturi during Swami's birthday celebrations in the year 1962. And this prayer, the essence of it is the feelings of a devotee who is waiting to make that connection with Swami. And imagine Swami is writing this as a prayer to Professor Kasturi and saying, recite this prayer. Who is Swami's neighbor in Prashanthi Nilayam, who probably is more close than anybody else physically to Swami. Even to him, this prayer was relevant. Even to you and me, this prayer is relevant. So I would like to conclude by reading these lines. I think the prayer was originally written in Telugu, which Professor Kasturi beautifully has translated into English. And this is what Swami had written as a prayer in that letter. Hoping you will guide me this day or the day after, I await your call from day to day. Hoping you will give darshan, but afraid you may not, I am all alert from hour to hour. Hoping you will come to me straight this very instant, I am watching and praying ever and on. Hoping you'll smile at me at last, though not at first, I am longingly gazing with thirsty eyes. I shall stand and stay in deep distress until my day of bliss does dawn. I am yours, your own, though exiled afar. Dear Father mine, do heal your child. I take this opportunity to express my deep sense of gratitude to Swami, who knows that more than anybody else, people like me need this opportunity to be able to connect to Swami again and again. And every time he gives us an opportunity to connect with devotees, he is giving us the greatest opportunity to connect with him. I can't thank him enough, and I can't express my gratitude enough for that. I take this opportunity to express my gratitude to each one of you for your beautiful company this evening. And I most humbly offer this at Swami's lotus feet. Thank you. Take care. Keep safe. Jai Sai Ram.